from the creators of The Shape. CCC Entertainment Group presents a nostalgic fan film series. Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Fred Krueger, and many other iconic horror icons from the 80s and 90s converge in a universe we've all been waiting for. The Horrorverse, Season 1. Available now on YouTube. Awaken the darkness.
Public disclaimer. Young children and some adults have found this program offensive. They're pussies, but they found it offensive. And in other words, things we say include fuck, pussy, shit, tits, the usual. Please, talk about it. Ask your parents. Birds and the bees?
Welcome to Around the Reel with your hosts, Aaron Carlson, Charles Lawson, and Samantha Hanna. Ah, shit. Here we go again.
Dude, I'm trending on Tubi. I'm trending on Tubi right now, you know what I mean? Just because of that.
You're tubing on trend. Oh, because you're brown?
Yeah, that's right.
You're tubing on
trend. Yeah.
You're chubby on Tubi?
No, my Tubi's chubby.
You got fat TV.
Yep. It's all about the girth, baby. Yeah, that's why it's like we were just talking about that, Jay, on the way over here about the urban films on yes. Tubi. Because Alok just released that Pay the Lady.
Yeah.
And I love the title.
You're thinking about getting in on that, doing something kind of hood?
Well, I mean, it's trending, so we're trying to get in on the trending.
I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, could I write an urban film? No.
Absolutely not.
I can't
Aaron,
do
you're,
it.
You're
I'm so white.
We would have to use our white teenage daughter, 20-year-old daughters, to figure out how to make an urban film.
Yes, literally. I can't do it. I suck so bad.
Our daughter could do better.
She could. I grew up in a time where I remember how it was, but I don't know if it's like that now. You know,
probably right. not. No, it's
I don't
definitely
know.
Not.
And if it is like that, then maybe I could pull it off. But I don't know.
It's not like that.
You could do it.
You know,
just make it a timepiece.
True.
You could. I interviewed a woman on my channel, Toy Styles. She's a author. She made her bones doing urban fiction, like maybe almost 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Like pretty popular. Like she's had like bestsellers and stuff. Right. She started making movies and, you know, like done well with them. She was watching my channel and like picked some stuff up.
Right.
And she was, because we were talking about it, and she was saying that like the ones that do well and you can always tell. Like, you know, it doesn't have so much to do with the quality of them or, you know, even sometimes the storytelling, but it's like, it's the authenticity.
You know,
that's what I'm saying.
I buy that.
That's
buy
what
that.
I'm saying. That's what worries
me.
Yeah, Aaron can pull off the authenticity.
I don't think I could.
You couldn't pull off the authenticity.
No, my black dude would come walking in and be like,
honest, that's why I don't do it.
Yeah,
right. I could be 100% right. honest because
no,
it would be inauthentic.
Yeah. Most black guys don't say awesome and badass. They just don't.
Yeah. Right.
Well, they don't say that.
They don't say no joke every other word.
No, they don't. No.
You know why?
Why?
Because they're not that.
I'm very authentic.
Aaron, you're unique.
I am me. I like the word authentic better.
Yeah.
You know, we can be authentic with a lot of things, but I'm not so sure we would be authentic with that.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be cool.
There's a filmmaker I know who I won't say his name, but you know, he's not African American, and he's making a few of them, and it's quite obvious that the movies are made by like someone who is not, you know what I mean?
You're trying to cash in on the what's hip.
Yeah. Like it's cast correctly, but they're, you know, like the words coming out of their mouths are not.
Just yeah. You need to let that cast take over and just improvise those lines.
Here's
just,
the premise.
Yeah, here's the premise. You guys do your thing.
Yeah.
can you darken up the script a little bit for me? I can't write it with color.
Oh.
You know, I just heard another embarrassing story about a producer.
I love you, Jay. I love you.
Again, I won't, you know, name
sure.
them.
Yeah, no.
But so they were working with an actress, African American actress, who also happened to be lesbian, and so like the and in the story, like her character was lesbian, and so like, you know, the producers were like going on and on about, you know, we're really good to, you know, we're really happy to be able to tell your story, and you know, like they were, you know, the virtue signaling kind of stuff, and they went on and on about it to the point where she was like really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I bet.
Because like just like every single time a new producer would come in the room, they would start talking about that.
Oh, so bad. Poor child.
Yeah, yeah. People seem to lose focus on like how awkward that is. Yeah, it's just like, okay, I get it.
Well, you know, you
can, I'm black, I get it.
There's a line, you know, having respect, you know, for someone and going too far.
Yeah.
And like, it goes beyond that.
You know what, Aaron, I think it's really great that you have this podcast and that you get to share your experience as an African-American. I'm just so happy to be part of that.
I thought he was going somewhere else with it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's so like, oh, going shit. Right where he would go.
You know, I'm so happy to support that, you know.
Oh, so funny. I appreciate that, Jay. Thank you so much.
So nice of you.
Paid a man.
And of course, we could spin the same thing and say, oh my gosh, Sam, being a female and having a show about talking to creatives around the world.
It's unbelievable. Right.
What's it like to be a woman doing something?
Doing something?
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
On that note, welcome to Around the Real.
Welcome to Around the Real.
I lost the bottom of my pen.
Right there. What's it like to be a woman doing something?
Doing something.
Welcome to Around the Real. Totally out of context.
Oh, I love it. It's so good.
And meanwhile, if you guys want to talk to me, it's like, oh, look, another white guy doing a podcast. Fuck, go figure.
Congratulations, Chuck.
Yeah, way to go, Chuck.
You're breaking new territory.
Yeah, yep.
Way to do what everybody else is doing, buddy.
Oh, man, too funny, dude. Well,
Jay Horton, we love talking to you.
Yeah, man. Thank you for jumping in here last minute like this and making it work. But there's a reason for it.
Yeah, what the hell, dude? Why did you want to be on the show so damn bad right now? Right now. Right now.
Right now.
Well, how do you know he wanted to be on so bad and it wasn't us begging him to come on?
Like, I bet.
Because we all talk to each other, fucker.
Oh. I might beg Jay Horton every fucking week. I'm like, nigga, you got to get on the show, bro. Ooh, I said the N-word. Maybe I can write that script.
No.
This is where I have to put the podcast disclaimer out. That was Aaron Carlson saying that, not the white guy in the room.
And that was not the white girl either.
And it had nothing to do with Jay Horton.
Oh, no.
Jay Horton is not responsible for that. Disclaimer.
This is us all the time, Jay. I'm so sorry.
I know. We're always
He's used to it. He's been on the show like 18 times.
I know. He has not. No one's been on the show 18 times for you.
Anybody who sits here and goes through our live stream event for our 100th episode did for the whole thing, or almost the whole thing. I think he had a ballot right towards the end. But, dude.
Right.
That one counted as like a dozen.
Exactly.
Literally. But I get it.
You know, it meant a lot to us that you were here for that. Thank you.
Oh, no. I was happy to be.
That was a big deal. That was a big deal for
us. It always means a lot when you answer any question or jump on a show or, you know, return a message.
Well, and still the reason for that being answer, is because we are, when we started out this crap, we always looked to you and watched your stuff and listened to what you had to say, and you helped us a lot.
Yes, you
I'm
did.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we will always love you for that.
Can you enunciate? Did you say this crap or craft?
I said this craft.
Okay, that's what I thought so too, but I was like, crap. She didn't say crap.
I said crap.
We started this crap.
I totally said crap.
Oh, shit. You know when we started this shit.
You know what I'm saying, though. When we started to want to put ourselves out there, you helped us so much.
Absolutely.
With all of it.
Yeah.
I always like to hear that. I do.
No, for real. Please. Yeah. No more.
Just,
no, it's okay. We're good.
You can hit me with it. No, I really do. And like whenever I post anything about my YouTube channel and I get a couple of those, you know, comments talking about how we helped each other out, it does mean a lot, you know, and it's not just like an ego thing. Like it really makes me feel good. You know, like that, like the woman I was talking about interviewing, Toy, she was talking about how, you know, she had these 5 or 6 movies that, you know, when she was just starting out, she made them and they were just on YouTube, just kind of collecting dust basically. And she started watching my channel and like learning about Film Hub and all that. And she put all these things up and, you know, she like she made money, like some of them more
than
I do.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah. Very cool.
It's amazing.
Yeah. You have a lot of great information that you put out there and help people with. And that's, it means a lot. I mean, to people, I mean, honestly, like you, we can literally credit you for getting started, just putting ourselves out there.
Right.
And like, you were the one that kind of guided us to that.
Yeah.
You did. So, yeah. And there's no better, like there's no better thing you can say to somebody doing that than something like that. It's really 100% true. Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, if the point is really what you're, that you're trying to help people, that's why you're putting it out there.
Well, that's what's cool about Jay. You know, he's been open and honest about everything that he's done. In this industry, and he keeps doing it, and you keep adding to it, and that's what's fucking amazing.
And he keeps sharing,
and he always shares, and that's the beauty of it. And people can, you can smell it, you know, right away whether or not someone is being legitimate or not, and you're the most legitimate person that we've met
ever.
Yes, yeah,
awesome,
and that's what's really cool. So I'm super happy for you, buddy. And that success. And your YouTube channel's blowing up, dude. I think it's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just passed 12,000 subscribers, which still, you know, it's relatively small in the grand scheme of things.
Well, you can't compete with these kids nowadays, you know what I mean?
Right. And I don't. But you know, it's, you know, every now and then I feel a little weird if I start talking about, you know, like my channel getting bigger or whatnot, because it's still, you know, like I just posted about crossing 12,000 subscribers, and one of the commenters was like, yeah, and he was being genuinely nice, he wasn't being a jerk, right. he was like oh, congratulations, you know, when my channel first crossed 100,000, it took, you know what I mean?
And you're just like,
you're like, oh, you think?
Dude, and I'm so excited. I want to post every day. I'm like, we're at 1,317 subscribers. 1,318 subscribers. Like, I'm seriously. Yeah. I don't really give a shit. I think it's a big deal.
Especially for us. We're not kids. So, and those kids, they can get those subscribers really easy. But we're
old fogies.
As much. We can't.
Yeah, old fogies trying to make movies.
We're trying out our TikToks and everything.
You know what I mean?
We're like slugs. We take a while.
Yeah.
I did one of those dance videos on TikTok. They're out my back and was down for 3 weeks. So I didn't bother posting it. We probably would have gotten a million hits, but you know,
who knows? Oh man. Okay. So the reason why Jay Horton is here is not only is he a fellow filmmaker and colleague with everybody
and friend,
but he has a new movie up.
Yes,
and it's a movie we've talked about quite a bit,
just a little bit.
Yeah,
it's been a long year getting here.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it made my weekend when I got an email from Jay going, "Hey, dude, we'd love to hear your feedback on this, and here's a movie." And I was like, "What the fuck?" That was exciting, dude. Even my my nipples got hard and stuff. It was
excited.
It was really cool.
He was so excited. Sam got pleasure out of it.
Yeah, I made homemade pizza that night. I made homemade pizza, and we sat down and we watched. Was good, right?
He doesn't even like pizza.
No, I did, but that pizza was good.
It was good.
Yeah,
because he made it.
Yeah. Okay, I could put all the shit on there I wanted.
We were home alone that night. Where was he?
Yeah,
she wasn't even home.
Yeah, she wasn't
there. Our
daughter
wasn't there. It was great.
She's partying like this. So high schoolers.
Yeah. It was Sam and I sitting down watching the movie, and I know Chuck watched it too. And buddy, congratulations!
Not with him.
It's fun as fuck. It's so fun.
Yeah,
it's super fun movie.
And thank you for putting Jared in there right off the.
Yes,
yeah,
that was badass.
Yeah.
As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh.
Yeah, my man was chilling at the table too, and he had the one name call out. Did any other characters have their names called out?
No one else had a name.
I didn't think so.
Not that I remember. And he's the only character that had a first and last name.
Badass.
Awesome.
There you go, Sam.
That's badass.
Mm-hmm.
That's badass.
It was great.
Very
so
special.
How are you feeling?
Yeah,
I mean, actually, pretty good. So I just got back from Los Angeles. We did the premiere there at a Lamel theater in North Hollywood, and it was, to be real honest, I've talked about this before, but you know, my anxiety stuff. I don't really like premieres all that much.
Right.
Like, I don't like to sit there in a group of people watching my movie, even if they're liking it. Like, there's just something about that experience.
Yeah.
That's like,
I feel you on that.
Yeah. I just do not. Like I hear every single, like, if there's an awkward silence, or like, I see every single flaw.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's hard for me to do.
Right.
But that said, this was a pretty positive experience. Like, you know, we get out there and I don't know what to well, I knew we had sold a certain amount of tickets, but you don't know what it's like to sit in a sold out crowd for your movie until you're sitting in a
sold out
crowd.
Sitting in it,
so like that. Yeah, like that was really cool. And, you know, and to hear people like gasp and scream and laugh and, you know, it was neat. That's it was really cool. Yeah. Now it was really stressful leading up to it, getting everything set up.
Yeah, I bet.
The general admission versus VIP tickets was like nightmare.
Oh,
so
no.
Like it's a 200 seat theater. They gave us 45 VIP tickets and 155 general admission. And then out of those 45, we got like 10 that we could distribute, you know, and we have a cast of like, you know, 102.
Yeah.
So it was like so that like there were yeah, so like we had cast members like, you know, flying cross country to see it. Mm-hmm. Like sorry, there's only general admission.
Right.
You know, I mean, it ended up working out. I turned out I was a lot more worried about it than it really wasn't a deal, but it was stressful. You know, we had the monster there and a standee getting in there.
That's fun.
Yeah,
that is fun.
People
that's
took pictures
cool.
with it.
That's, that is very cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. And that's kind of like we had the same experience with Sam's movie when we were premiered up here, because that theater sat.
Yeah, that was extremely stressful.
Yeah, there was like 200 people. Yeah, that first sellout we had was about 200 as well, I believe, for Sam's movie. And watching a documentary premiere is a lot weird because it's such a serious thing. So you're not getting that.
It is quiet.
Yeah.
You know, people quiet. Aren't laughing and, at least you're hoping
they're not. We did the Q&A after and I called as many people up there as I could. Like, I was like, come with me. You come. You come.
What's your name? Get up here.
Yeah. I was terrified.
Yeah, you were shitting your pants, but you did great.
I was shitting my pants.
Yeah. But those premieres are kind of, they're strange. Like, our experience was like, it was pretty quiet. You know, we have a few laughs and we were paying attention to people a little bit. At least I was.
Yeah. I was too.
But then at the end of that motherfucker, when that movie ended and everybody stood up and started applauding.
That's weird. Yeah.
It was so weird, Jay. I was like, for me, I was like, of course they. You know, that's how I felt. Right. I was like, told you, Sam. Told you. Yeah, no.
And
she
Sam,
started bawling.
I don't know if you felt the same as I did, but leading up to it, so I've had a few movies premiere before, but I've never sold out a room before. Like even a year ago, if you would have said, hey, you're going to have a sold out room for this movie, would you even have believed it?
No, absolutely not. I wouldn't.
Yeah,
no.
Me neither.
Yeah. No, I didn't see it coming at all. I didn't. I was like, oh God, this is going to be embarrassing. Like, we're
going to
have like 15 seats filled and it's going to be embarrassing.
Yeah,
but. You humble motherfuckers. You guys are so humble.
I even knew. I even knew ahead of time that we had sold out, but I was like, you know, half of them are going to show up or a quarter.
That's kind
of,
I felt that way too.
You did the numbers percentage-wise.
Yeah.
Three out of ten will show.
Exactly.
Well, because we knew how many seats we sold too, and I felt that way too. I was like, oh, I don't think everyone will come.
Well, after they bought the tickets, I didn't give a shit. I was like, well, at least they paid.
That's where we were getting a piece of this, so I did.
But they all showed too.
They did.
But it's a crazy experience, isn't it?
And they stayed.
It's wild.
Yeah, it really is. And it was in like conjunction with the movie streaming release, so it hit streaming the same day.
Right.
Like a lot of our reviews were coming out right at the same time, which have been pretty overwhelmingly positive.
That's good.
Which I, you know, and again, you never know how a movie's going to be received.
Right.
You know,
definitely.
So like that's really good. Even our, you know, Letterboxd reviews have been pretty good so far.
Awesome.
Like
that's good to hear.
So far, it seems like it has a lot of good positive momentum. Definitely. We'll see how that translates into, you know, actual dollars and cents in about a month.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it feels like it's going to do well, but, you know, you never know.
Yeah, I have that feeling too. You've got a good monster movie that you made, that B-style, old-school...
Creature feature.
I love it.
And
it's
that's
different.
It's fun. They don't make them like that anymore.
No.
And one of my questions for you was, what inspired you to actually make this? Because when I started watching it, and when you pitched the idea back in the day when you were getting this thing going, you know, I immediately thought, like, those movies like Beast Within back in the day. That's like a movie that stuck with me when I was a kid. That scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. That was fucked up. You know, when I was paying attention to your movie, I'm like, oh, it's kind of there. What type of movies inspired you to make this?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey, everybody. Let's talk about Buzzsprout, our podcast host. You know, when we started our show, we wanted a platform to share our voice in this industry and have some fucking fun. With Buzzsprout and their team being passionate about helping you succeed, you're in good hands.
You'll get a great-looking podcast website, audio players that you can drop into other websites, detailed analytics to see how people are listening, tools to promote your episodes, and so much more.
Following the link in the show notes lets Buzzsprout know we sent you. Get you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for the paid plan and help support our show. So join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. Let's create something great. Join together, people.
Well, I mean, the big one that actually like kicked it off, and this was, you know, whatever, 15 years ago, was From Dusk Till Dawn. With the genre flip, you know, like I really, there's something, and there was a whole slew of like horror movies with like criminals in them after that, you know, and like, I just really like that setup. Like I like when you take people that live outside of society and then they can't rely on that society to, you know, bail them out, whether it's the police or whatever, you know, they're just, you know, they have to deal with it. And I also like when you have like, you know, quote unquote, like badass characters having to deal with something that's way more badass.
Yeah.
You know,
I totally get
that. Yeah, that was the initial like inspiration. Okay. But as far as like stuff that it follows the template of more, I would say it's a little more like The Howling or American Werewolf in London.
Yep.
You know, like where like in both of those movies, you know, like we don't see the creatures till, you know, pretty late
end.
In the movie.
Yeah.
You know, especially The Howling. I think it's like I think that one might be similar, like in the last half an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so I liked that. And it was something that I was a little bit worried about going, you know, into releasing it, you know, because again, our monster spoiler doesn't show up until, you know, the last 45 minutes.
Right.
And, you know, and I was really worried about people being like, hey, you sold this as a monster movie and the monster shows up, you know, a little halfway.
Yeah.
And
you build it up good.
But yeah. And so far, like the response has been really great. And even the like kind of middling reviews have been like, well, it was a little slow getting there. But once the monster gets there, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. But what I love about those reviews, though, especially when it comes to like when it hits Tubi and all that, you know, is where retention really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like people that read it, they're going to tough it out. They're going to wait for that monster.
Because
I've heard there's a monster. So they're going to watch it till that monster shows
up. Well, and not only that, your choice of actors was great. Like phenomenal choice for actors because they keep you going. They keep you hanging in there because you love the actors and you fall in love with them right away. So your actors was good.
Your
choice of actors was excellent.
I think so too.
Go ahead, Chad.
And I don't want to, obviously we're not going to do any spoilers. The thing just came out, but I'll tell you this. There's certain characters in the storyline that you're rooting for them to go.
And they pull
that off really well.
Really well.
You motherfucker.
One in particular, Aaron and I, like.
Oh, I hated that character.
That character.
Yeah, I wanted that character to go right away.
I think I know.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what we wanted to do in our movie, too, when we did The Shape.
We
wanted to do the character where everyone hated her so much they couldn't wait for her to die.
Yeah.
That's kind of, but that's a good thing. Like, that's important. Yeah. It's important in a story because if you hate a character as much as you could honestly love a character, that's just as good.
Yeah, I always believe in balancing the scale when you're writing a story. Right. If you've got one you're rooting for so much to make it, you need one that you want
that
not to make it at
for
all.
Not to make it.
And every time I sit down to write something, that's how I think. I need to have somebody that is just ruthlessly hateable. Where you're just like, fuck them.
You're terrible.
You know, but then that's the cool thing that you can do when you're writing, because then you can take those characters and you can actually transition them into
something a little more or something different.
Yeah.
In a series,
do it all the time. And that's what I like. If you like Negan in Walking Dead, he's the main guy that everybody hates. And all of a sudden you can flip him later if you keep him around long enough.
Oh, the governor's more hated.
Yeah, and then you can root for the motherfucker or you get some feeling for him. And that's like the fun stuff that you can do when you tell these stories longer.
But I
always think you got to have that balance.
Yeah, you do.
Between those two.
But an actor that can pull that off and be hated.
Yeah.
That is an exceptional actor. It really is.
And there's a difference between like being hated and being like annoying.
Yeah. Well,
you know
I mean?
Well,
not really a difference to me. I hate the annoying. If you're annoying, I hate you.
I hate you. I want you to die right away.
Or being, maybe annoying was the wrong word. Being like unpleasant to watch.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
And, you know, and speaking of characters too, like one thing I think really like separates this from, you know, other movies at its budget level and lower is like we really put a lot of effort into humanizing people and to playing the pathos and the emotion of things, you know, almost to where, you know, it's, you know, some of it's a little melodramatic, but like I like that kind of stuff myself, you know, like to me that helps, you know, propel that, you know, first 45 minutes.
Well, and I love the fact that you guys give just enough of the story to keep you going, what is going on? And you're like, you're trying to figure it out, like, what? Yeah, you're hanging in there going, what is going on? You're trying to figure it out. I love that. I love that. It's like a thriller thing.
Exactly.
And I love a thriller.
Exactly. So, and that's that.
You
now
hang in there, you're like, what?
And now then
you're really paying attention. Once you don't understand what's going on, you're like trying to figure it out, then you're really into the movie and really paying attention. Yeah. That's a good little trick.
Yeah,
I think so. And you know, and there will be some people that, you know, won't, you know, because, you know, we're in the you know, the times of watching our movies while we're scrolling and stuff like that. So there will be people who be like, well, it was too confusing.
Is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, there's a fair, you know, a couple of fair criticisms that have come out about it, you know, maybe being a little bit too packed with characters. And I accept that, you know, it was a financial function. And it was also, you know, a function of I have this explosive last act and I need
people to kill
for it to kill. Yeah, you know, so, literally. You know, I had to.
I get it.
You know, yeah.
I totally get it.
I loved it. I love the character development that you did. And I love, well, yeah, I love the actors, the way they played the characters and everything. I was impressed by the character development.
Yeah, and the cool thing is
because for a horror movie, you don't really get that.
Right.
That often.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, now knowing your inspiration from Dusk Till Dawn, it makes sense. You know, you've got this thriller in the first, you know, first half of the film, and then it flips on you, and that's what's really fun to watch. Yeah.
You know, the funniest, not even really a criticism, just something a couple of people have said. They felt like the first hour was really artsy, and I was like, what? Like, I don't think it's artsy at all. But a couple of people said, which is fine.
He had a few lens flares, you know, on the lights.
I guess maybe that was artsy.
It was some art.
Yeah. It looked good.
Yeah.
They might have said that because DP's in. Did you do that intentionally? Because when you did the flashback scenes to the 80s, because actually the way you set the shots on some of them, it really did feel like the older style of movies. So that might be what they're referring to.
Our visual style was totally different in the flashbacks. So we were in the present day, most everything was handheld or on a gimbal. So it was a lot of just like, you know, constant motion or, you know, energy.
Yeah.
And then on the flashbacks, they were almost all like static.
Static.
There wasn't a lot of camera movement. It was mostly just, you know, like static shots, you know, wide, close up, medium.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was
not
brilliant.
A lot of,
it took you right back to that day of the movie. Like, it
totally,
really did.
Totally.
It was great. Your flashbacks were actually immaculate.
Paid wonderful tribute to that style of filmmaking back then, I thought.
Yeah.
And of course, we changed, you know, our color palette a little bit, you know, so, you know, I gave it a little bit more of a washed out look.
No, it looked great. You really sold the flashbacks very well.
Yeah, it reminded me too, Jay. This is funny story. Like every Friday when I go to my dad's house when I was a kid, we'd go to the video store, right? And for the weekend, we would load up on movies on Friday night, and that's what we would do all weekend. And I'd run right to the horror section, and you start looking at every box cover. You know, because we didn't have anything back in the day to tell us what movies were cool or not. You just had to fucking guess, and you grab one.
Yeah, and you're making a $3-4 gamble. And for I don't know about you, but for me, I had to walk. It was like maybe 2 miles to the video store back and forth.
Okay,
so you know you're looking at a 2-hour round trip, $3 put down, like.
Well, and then I never got them back in time, so I always had the late fee.
and late fees on the back end.
The rewind fees. Fuck those rewind fees. Those are stupid. My dad would get so mad at me. Yeah, he'd yell at me all the way home.
It's a commitment to go to the video store. You're going to watch it.
Yeah, it was my job to rewind our tapes.
My only good relationship I ever had was with the people at this fucking videos.
I loved them. I loved them. We'd hang out there all day waiting for a movie to come back. I remember standing there all fucking day waiting.
Someone drop it in the Dropbox. Yeah. And they're like, what is that movie? What did they just drop in there?
So fun.
Well, they did.
Your movie reminds me of that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does.
It's about a 15-year-old script, but I think a lot of times as writers, as filmmakers, as artists, like, we tend to go back, like, stylistically to the time when we came of age.
Yes,
you know, like,
we do.
You know, like between, like, say, the age of, you know, maybe, like, 12 and, like, maybe 25.
For sure.
Like, and it's almost
like... nostalgia is like...
Yeah, and I haven't really grew too much past that.
Me neither.
So, none of us have. I still call like garbage mail kids, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's funny too, because I mean, Aaron and I are only a couple years apart, but for whatever reason, the 80s music grabs in more than anything, and for me, it's the beginning of the 90s music.
It's 90s.
Yeah, I would say me and you, Chuck, were more on that. Like, I like 80s music, but the 90s... Because I was a late bloomer.
He was a late bloomer. Chuck was too.
My musical tastes are more like from when I was 18 as opposed to when I was, you know, 10 or 12.
Right? Yeah, and see, I was influenced by TV a lot back then, and that's the problem. When I was a young kid, Miami Vice hit, and I started watching that, and immediately I was like in awe of the music and the visuals. That's what got me. And I think back now to this day, and it's like what we're making with our horrorverse stuff. You know, that nostalgia is all that I'm doing. That's everything I'm writing. That time frame that you were talking about, Jay, is absolutely accurate. I'm drawn to that, and I want to savor that, and I want to reshare that. And I appreciate when I see other filmmakers out there doing it, and even big budget stuff. That's why I love Stranger Things so much. That's like the only show that really captures that Spielberg kind of older. You know, the Stephen King movies back in the day where you're just like, oh, God, they got it. They fucking
Cobra Kai,
got it.
You like
Cobra Kai. That's why I love that stuff, you know? But that's my shit.
That's your
time. That's my shit.
Y'all, he's got to be 50.
My birthday's next week, Jay. Sorry, I'm
gonna be 50. Next week.
Oh, man, you're beating me by about a year.
I'm beating you by a year? Motherfucker. Damn it.
I'll be 49 in April.
Okay.
Let's just say it out loud. You older, but you look better. There you go.
Thanks. Your
birthday present doesn't come early. You're older, but you look better.
Black don't crack.
You're talking to him, right?
Pay the light.
Sure, I'm talking to him.
Pay the light. Black don't crack.
But, you know, talking about like the nostalgia stuff, so like almost all of my movies have kind of a 90s flavor, you know, Craving's really the first time I like actualized it and said this is set in, it was actually originally supposed to be 92. It's kind of stupid the reason I made it 98, not stupid, but so there was a late addition to the script, like the character of Frank, he was like the tattooed guy that was sitting outside that was singing the song. Not like that character was in it, but like the whole like song singing thing was a late edition. I was looking for a stock piece of music to go in there, and of course I'm looking for 80s and like 90s stuff, and I stumbled across this like K-pop song that had some auto-tune in it, and I just liked the song so much, so like I get on the internet, I'm like, when did auto-tune become a thing? And like Cher was like the first one to really like break through with it Do You Believe in Love, which was released in 98. So I was like, okay, so for this one little tiny moment, I'm gonna take the setting of my movie and move it 6 years so that it could possibly be. What's that?
I so love that.
Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome. Fantastic. And I just, and like I said, it's such a like a silly little joke and a little, but it was my favorite joke in the movie, and I was like, I want to keep the song. And,
That whole scene is dude, I love that scene. That's what we're talking
about. A love affair with Cher.
Oh, yeah, I love Cher anyway.
He loves Cher.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Yeah, Cher saved my ass.
Yeah, and it's still a touch anachronistic because I don't think K-pop was a thing, but whatever. I'll take the criticisms.
It's awesome, you know, hearing that.
The other thing that we kind of messed up on the period specific stuff was so the movie's set in a bar. You know, in 98, you know, in a rural area, and there's no smoking. You know what I mean? There were no ashtrays. Like, I remember on, like, towards the end of the first day of production, just somebody, one of the actors offhandedly was like, like, there's no like cigarettes or ashtrays, and it hadn't occurred to anyone.
Smart person.
No, anyone.
Actually,
so,
I never picked up on that.
I didn't either.
Yeah,
see, but they're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's something I wouldn't really pick up on myself. But what I did do that I'd already shot the bar, so I couldn't really do anything inside the regular bar, but we hadn't done any of the bathroom stuff yet.
Okay.
So I did all these like homemade, like don't smoke here, no smoking signs.
Oh, good.
Thinking maybe the bartender was an very adamant non-smoker. So yeah, that's my explanation.
There you go.
And that's why the bar was so empty. There's only a few consumers there.
Yeah, you know, you can't smoke in here.
They don't allow smoking. Yeah, I did not notice that. It's something, like I said, I don't really care that much about it. But, you know, I had a couple of producers that were like, well, you know, and just to, you know, so there wouldn't be any tension. I was like, okay, put up the no smoking signs.
It makes sense. It makes sense. That's good.
I mean, if you notice that, then you're really...
Yeah, you're really lost. That is my feelings on continuity in general. Unless it's something like majorly glaring, I really don't care much about continuity. When we get into the monster sequence, for example, there are shots, in there that are taken so far out of context. It's really hard to move that monster around the set. He's wearing, the head thing. He can't see. He's wearing about 40 pounds of prosthetics. And you have to do, every time he moves, like walks or anything, you have to like take the head off. He has to do the walk like 4 or 5 times, counting his steps and all that. And then you roll the cameras, put the head on him, and then do the same thing.
There you go. Do the same thing. But, muscle memory, motherfucker.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
Okay.
But it limits you, like in how much you can move him, how many shots you're going to get of him.
Yeah.
So, it was constantly a matter of, in editing where, I need a shot of him, looking this way. But, he's not looking that way in the moment. So, I have to go back to the shot way back when. And, maybe the lighting is, mismatched because he's standing somewhere else. But in the chaos of it, you don't see any of it.
You won't see it, yeah.
I have a question. So, how much did Robert have to do with the actual movement of the monster?
Quite a bit. He actually, he worked a lot with Xavier, who was also, and he was the, he played the...
Got it.
He played the person.
Yeah. So the person that was playing the monster also, the person playing the actor also played the monster.
Okay.
Yeah. So Bravo was working very closely with that person, putting the, with the movements and how the monster moved. And I told Bravo, from the get, both with the design of the monster and how it moved and acted, that it was kind of in his purview, because when you're dealing with a budget this low and you're doing complicated special effects, you gotta kind of let go of a preconceived notion or vision a little bit, because at the end of the day, if I said no, he has to move like this, well, maybe that would take a different kind of build, like Bravo did everything, from the build to the movement, and it's all works a certain way. And what happens on a lot of low budget movies is then the director gets in there and is like, no, in my vision he has to do this, and the build of the monster can't allow for that. So I was like, let's just cut out the middleman here, and as far as what the monster, where he moves, what he does, you do it.
That's kind of what I figured. You're smart like that. I kind of knew that would be your answer, but
I want the monster to spin around and grab the thing behind him.
I was curious about
the monster does this.
Yeah, even when it came to the kills, there were a few specific things, from the script that was like, well, this has to be this.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was like, well, what can you do and make it look really cool? Like, this person has to die. Like, a lot of my direction with Bravo was like, okay, this person needs to die. They need to die really cool. Mm-hmm. Go make that happen. And then he's like, well, where do you want to shoot it? I don't care. You tell them, where's it going to look the best for your effect? That was the biggest fight that me and Bravo had, because he's so worried about stepping on people's toes, and he didn't want to tell the DP where to put the camera. I was like, no, tell them where to put the camera. They will adjust to you. I don't care where the best lighting for the shot is. We want the shot to look cool.
You guys seem to work really well together. That's with the whole way the movie worked out, you guys seem to work well.
Yeah, we do. It's just been, you know, we've been working together a long time, and it's a matter of, you know, like mutual respect and giving.
Well, you even lived together, right, for a minute while you did.
Well, yeah, while we were shooting. Yeah. So like I typically live in Georgia and I flew to L.A. and I stayed in a room in his house for, it turned out being almost 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, man.
If you go back and listen to episode 120 something.
He was actually sad to see you go.
They're both on the show.
Yeah. He's like, no.
Well, it comes down to trusting the people you're working with and building that relationship with them. And that's the key thing. And that's what I'm hearing. And that's what we kind of go off that same philosophy. That's why we hand stuff off to people. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you hire an artist on a low budget production, 9 times out of 10, they're not being paid exactly what they're worth. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so like you have to let them within boundaries, you have to let them express themselves how they want to express themselves.
Yep. You know, for example.
Oh, totally. And But you know, sometimes you have a vision and you know the vision might clash. You know, like for example, on this, you know, we had an excellent composer and he did a great job. We had a couple of sequences.
Fantastic.
We had a couple of sequences where we didn't see eye to eye and, you know, we couldn't really, you know, reconcile between, you know, what I had before in the stock music and what he was doing and where I ended up replacing some of it, you know, but that was, you know, a mutual, you know, decision and agreement and okay, yeah, go ahead. You know.
Okay. So you worked out, that's how you worked out those disagreements or whatever you want to call them. I don't know. Not necessarily.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say it wasn't really so much. Yeah. It wasn't so much a disagreement. It was just, it was a point where we just like, we couldn't get a certain section to match the energy of the stock. So I ended up using bits of the stock.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
I gotcha. I've done that.
Your composer was fine with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, as fine as he can be.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, you're the boss, applesauce.
I'll put it this way. We're still friendly and we'll still work on the next project together.
Good. Yeah, that's good. There you go.
Great composer.
He's awesome. Noticed that right away. He's awesome. And he elevated the movie like really far. And really went above and beyond.
Mm-hmm. People don't understand how important composers are, but they're like it. They're like, they really matter. They really bring your movie to life. And I always credit my composer for GPO because he actually brought my movie to life. Like it wouldn't be a movie without him. Like he just really brought it.
Yeah, the magic that they can bring to elevate that. Your vision is ridiculous.
For sure.
I mean, I'll tell you, you had a magical
composer on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. When I finished the first cut of the movie and I had laid, you know, stock under the whole thing, and I was honestly like a little like, God, man, this movie kind of sucks. honestly, that's kind of how I felt. I was like, what the hell did we just do? And then, right after his first pass of it, and it was just a first pass, you know, like not, you know, fine tuned or nothing. I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be okay.
Oh, yes.
You know?
That's great.
I know that feeling.
That's great.
Like, that's fucking funny, though. You get all done, you're like, I would have changed that music immediately. I'd be like,
I have the best time when I'm editing one of our films, finding those songs.
Yeah.
That stock stuff.
Oh, the stock stuff?
Yeah. And I find some shit and I'm like, okay, I know I'm not supposed to get attached to this, but I really like this.
He gets attached.
So I'm like,
Mr.
Composer, you know, my friend, can we try to mimic this?
For Aaron to find a composer that actually can.
Right. And that's a really difficult thing. You know?
It's hard.
Actually, I do want to be fair to the composer, too, because I think what actually happened, to be, you know, 100% honest and put a little bit more on me, like I there was two little sections that I just said we couldn't reconcile them, but the truth is, if I'm being honest, I really just fell in love with those things.
Yeah.
And there was just no way anybody was going to exactly match it. And at the end of the day.
And that's that too.
Yeah.
It happens.
I get it. And I think that's just because of our own. I don't know what it is.
Honestly,
but it's
in
something
those moments,
in there.
It doesn't matter how good the composer is because you already, that music matches your shit or it.
Exactly. And
there was
nothing he could have done.
No.
That,
so
yeah,
in that
except
sense.
Except play the same track.
100%. 100%.
Excuse me. In that sense, it doesn't matter how good they are.
Right.
Yeah. Which honestly, that whole thing goes counter to how I usually work, but it's just in this particular particular instance, this particular sequence was just so important to me that I just I could not, I just couldn't let it go.
No compromise.
Let me tell you a story, Jay, real quick. When we did our first one, The Outrider, there was a towards the end, and we had a Hollywood composer helping us do this.
We did.
Like he did like trailers for Batman versus Superman, all that stuff back in the day. We were in awe of his talent. And he just fell in love with us for some reason. I don't know. Well, it's probably because, well, me. But anyway. we could not get this ending right the way I wanted it. Because he had a specific track that he had that I loved. And I had it in my head. And I'm like, dude, that song has to be this moment when Marcus Ford turns to the Outrider.
Tell the backstory and say that you already had that in your head and in your movie before you even met the dude.
Before I even met the dude, right? And then, that's what happened. So when I'm talking to him about this ending, you know, he sent us back some stuff that was just a tad off from what it was. And I'm like, dude, just put that fucking song.
It's your song.
Right there. And he would not do it. So you know what I did when we cut it? I put
the song in there.
Yes, I did. I did. Yeah.
But he didn't want to do it because he's like, I've sold that song to so many movies.
Yeah, I was like,
and that's why we don't care.
Not this movie.
He didn't give a shit, but he wanted to make it a little different.
And I liked what he did, but you know, I was stuck on it. I would not bend. Like, no, fuck you, no. This is what it's going
to
be.
And who knows, you know, like, you know, if like 5 years from now, I might listen to those two things again and be like, you know what? He was right.
He probably will.
And he probably was. I don't know. Yeah, it worked fine.
Well, when it comes to music, it is hard to change your, like when, you know, the way you see things is different from the way other people do. So when you give it to a composer, if you don't give them the music you already had in it or then.
Right.
Whatever they come up with, sometimes it's better, but you don't hear it right away. Right. Like, you don't hear it because you're so stuck in your, like...
You're all stuck. Yeah, you get stuck. And that's the shitty part of using temp, I think.
Sometimes. I know, honestly.
But I can't edit without it.
Yeah.
I gotta have it.
So I think you need to go back to old school, Aaron. Uh-oh. Which was using, you know, Hans Zimmer. Use stuff that you know we can't fucking use for your temp.
That's what I've been doing in the horrorverse. I've been using all John Carpenter shit.
Okay.
That's all I've been using. So I know that won't be there.
Yeah, I got a
slight cautionary tale about that. So on Death Day, and I don't care, they can come after me now. It's long enough. So I cut the
Jay Horton said, bring it, bitches.
I cut the entire temp score to Carpenter's scores. I downloaded a bunch off of YouTube. And entire movie.
Yeah.
So then somewhere along the way, because I do my sound design within Premiere as well. So somewhere along the way, I had one of those tracks like still in background in somewhere. And I never took it out. I forgot about it, forgot that it wasn't temp.
Okay.
And, you know, we did have a composer that then composed everything. But like that track somehow never got removed. So like to this day, like somewhere in there, there's a like a
little
like
piece,
a five second like John Carpenter sting.
Boom, boom. You know?
Anyway, could come at me. You know, it's
honestly,
I love it. I love it.
I mean,
yeah. That movie's made about a total of $5,000.
So right, if you really care, that really means that much to you.
Oh man,
it's funny, it's
fun stuff, man. It's fun. There's little things that we talked about in here, like the smoking in the bar.
Yep.
Yeah,
and the howling, and it keeps echoing in my head right now during this conversation because I was thinking about what we shot our last webisode, and it's almost done, but you know, we've recreated a certain scene from Escape from New York, and it was important to me to have my character smoke in that scene because that's what Kurt Russell fucking does in that scene. But we're in the location, and we can't smoke in this location. So I'm like, what the fuck are we going to do? So I made a crack about it with this vape.
Okay.
This vape pen. That was the only thing. So when my character speaks to another character in this film asking for a smoke, this is what he gets. And I was thinking, okay, well, Snake Plissken would look at this kind of thing and like go, what the fuck? You know? that's kind of what we did.
That's funny. But that's still cool.
We played homage to it. But at the end, when we're outside, he finally gets a cigarette. You know what I mean? That's
See, that's
cool.
There you go. It's like the like Bruce Willis trying to get the espresso in Hudson Hawk. I mean, you know.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I
love you, Jay. See, he gets it. Fucking gets it, man. And then the howling. Like, when's the last time you watched The Howling? And what immediately goes to your mind? That one transformation.
The transformation, yeah.
I think I
watched it at one point last year before we shot, just because it was in my mind as a homage. Honestly, I was doing a bunch of Facebook promotion for The Crowdfunder, so I was like, movies that inspired creating.
I remember that.
The Howling was one of them, so I was like, I probably, you know, it's been probably 30 years since I watched The Howling. I should probably watch it before I go around and tell people it's a big influence, you know?
Yeah.
So then the one thing that really shocked me actually about watching it again, because it had been years. Like, I remember, you know, I was a kid probably last time I watched it. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, oh, like werewolves and blah, blah, blah. But really, man, that, like, much like The Exorcist itself, that they're more dramas than horror movies that have a horror element, and then it like explodes at the end.
Yep.
You know, but you know, like that Exorcist, I mean, that's like, you know, mother and daughter, you know, relationship drama for, you know, almost all with the little bits of horror all the way till the end, you know, Howling similar.
Little bits of horror. Yeah. That shit is terrifying.
It's terrifying, right? Yeah. It sticks with you, but there is though.
That's because you're a mother and a daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then you get the priest. The priest and his mother story. I mean, there is this character drama in those movies, and they did make him that way. And that's, I think that's
what. I think what separates those from, like, you know, say Craving is like they had a consistent, like, you know, like horror atmosphere throughout, where mine really does, like, you know, goes from, you know, crime thriller pretty much exclusively into, you know, gonzo horror.
Right.
You know, I'm doing it's a totally different tone.
Yeah.
But the instinct is the same.
Yeah. It's I so feel that,
fun.
Yeah.
It's so much definitely. Fun making this shit, you guys. It's so fun,
it's fun.
Creating these worlds and doing these
things.
Especially when you find the right people to pair up with and to partner up with. That's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the trick.
Here we are. We're closing in on 50, and I'm still playing.
Make-believe.
I'm playing. I'm playing make-believe. And it's,
we're still winging it, you know?
Yeah, and it's so funny. I thought that when we were doing our last shoot out there. I'm like, I got a bunch of grown-ass men out here dressed up. Everybody in this fucking park is looking at us, and I'm like, yeah, we're making a movie.
It's kind of fun. Time, it's fun. Like, oh, okay, let's go to play.
Yeah, and it's so weird. It's so weird. I don't know why we love it so much.
I don't know why.
I can't put my finger on it. It's fucking ridiculous. And it's hilarious. And everybody takes it. And they take it so seriously.
Oh, yeah.
All of us do. We take it so fucking seriously. We get on set, everybody's like fucking serious.
I don't take it seriously. Yeah. I mean, I collect Garbage Pail Kids, for fuck's sakes. I don't take anything seriously.
I guess you're right. I do and I don't, because I know it's fun and it's silly.
There's aspects of it that you take seriously, you're not taking, like, I don't take myself so seriously, I take the work seriously to a point. Like, I made a Facebook post. I was laying on the couch before I went, and I was still in my sweats. And I was like, is it bad to wear sweats to your premiere? And I took a shot of me in sweats. And I don't know who it was, but somebody like posted like a paragraph, like, you know, you really should show some respect for your work. Well, and they were trying to be nice. But
ones that you read.
And my gut instinct, I didn't do it, and I'm glad I didn't now, but I almost responded like, I was like, dude, we're making a $90,000 monster movie. We're not curing cancer.
As far as I know, you know, the Oscars, this is not the Oscars.
And people have a tendency to be critical of things that are out in the public. So when you put yourself out there, to expect, like, people are going to be critical of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's hard for me.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, why I didn't was because, you know, his comment actually, I'm actually grateful for the comment, because it did get me thinking. And I was like, you know, yes, I don't. But, you know, there are actors in my movie that are, they're absolutely, like, it might be their first movie or might be the first time they've been to a premiere. Yeah. And, you know, they're going out and they're dressing up. And, and like, the director shows up and sweats, like, no big deal.
Yeah,
you know,
a good point.
I can see how that could be read as disrespectful. So, you know, I'm not going to go get a tux, but,
you're going to throw some slacks on at least or something.
I put on some pants. I wore pants to my premiere. That was my gift.
We going to pull up in a stretch, bro? You know what I mean?
As long as you were wearing sweats, you're good.
Like, right. Yeah. Sweats and a t-shirt. Yeah, I almost did. And it would have been cold. It was cold there in LA that week.
Yeah.
We have a game. We have a game to play. We have to implement our games back into the show more.
We haven't been.
That's one thing I know that our crowd of people are like, you guys don't play games enough anymore. We need to play games.
No one says that.
Yeah, I've got a few. Yeah, absolutely.
People miss the games.
Yeah, they miss the games.
By the way, before you get into it, I just want to point out, and I hadn't noticed it before, I really like the Around the Real logo behind Aaron with the crooked R, like the A&R. I like that.
Okay, I made that myself.
Yeah, did you really? That's great. I love it. And I'm really picky about fonts, and I really like that.
She did that.
Oh, thank you. I actually did
that. Yeah, she made that out of wood and everything.
It looks great.
And the R fell crooked when we transferred everything back over to the studio, and I could never get it to fucking stay where it was supposed to stay.
It looks cool that way, though.
Really? I thought it was on purpose.
No.
When she originally made it, it was straight.
I was like, I like it.
I mean, it would look good straight too, but I like the crooked.
Yeah,
it draws my eye to it.
That's awesome.
Am I crooked? Yeah.
I've been sitting here looking at that almost the entire interview.
You've been looking at the crooked. What about me, bro?
I mean, he was looking at your screen.
He ain't looking at anything crooked on you.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as I heard the age, I was like, I don't deal with old dudes. I'm just joking.
This is old black guys. Awesome. Yeah. Dude, I'm going trending soon.
As soon as I hear the age.
Man, we're going to get canceled on this one.
Oh, no, you be all right. If anybody blame us, we're fine.
Cancel culture.
Sam, what game you got? You got a game.
I do.
Okay.
I do. Let's play. This is one we have not played yet.
Oh, shit.
We got a brand new game.
We have a new game.
Okay.
We got a veteran guest.
All right.
Playing a new game.
Be nice to
Jay. And you know what? I don't know what to call this one, so it's a foul language trivia game.
The foul language trivia game.
So I guess it's the foul language.
Okay. All
right. That's good.
All right. Okay. I like it.
So we're all aware.
Boo-boo Kitty Fucks fucking trivia game.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
All right. What do
we
got?
Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So
is this a buzz in or everybody gets their...
So I'm going to give you a question, and I'm going to give you an A, B, C, D.
Okay.
And then I'm going to... Jay always goes first because the guess is always first.
You can't just pick double D's. It doesn't work that way, Jay. You got to make sure you think of an answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Double D's.
Okay. So are we ready?
I guess
no,
so.
No, but let's try it anyway.
Foul language trivia game.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus.
What was the first known context for which the word shit was used? Are you ready for the A, B, C, D?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Give us multiple choice.
A is not giving a shit. B is up shit creek. C, taking a shit. Or D, shit on a shingle. SOS.
Hmm.
I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B? Okay. B is up shit creek.
Oh, okay.
What are you going to say here?
I'm going to go shit on the shingle. I'm going shit D on this one. Yeah, okay. Yeah, because that does look like shit.
Shit on the shingle is really yummy.
It is good. It just looks like shit.
What are you
going to
say,
Chuck? I'm going to go with D too because that's the oldest term, shit on a shingle, that I could think of, because shit on a shingle is because all the birds just shit on the fucking rooftops. Shit on a shingle. All
right, what do we got?
D.
So the first known use of shit was... not giving a shit.
Fuck. Are you serious?
I am serious.
You know what? That's how I feel about this game. I don't give a shit.
Not giving a
you
shit?
You were all wrong. Yeah.
How did they fucking come up with that?
It seems like that would be more modern.
Yeah, exactly. I don't give a shit.
I know. It does seem more. I was actually surprised by that too.
So how'd shit on the shingle come to play?
Shit on the shingle, I threw that in there because I love shit on
the
shingle.
Oh, you motherfucker. All right. Fair enough. All right. What's the next one? That was good. All
right.
Damn it.
So which language has no real curse words in it? Okay. Italian, Japanese, Arabic, or Portuguese?
I'm going to say Arabic.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Arabic, too.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. They didn't cuss at all in Stargate.
Okay. We're running Arabic across the board. We all think that all that fucking Jesus writing shit didn't swear.
There's no
way.
They
swore.
No, they
I
didn't.
Love this so much.
Portuguese.
The actual answer, I love this. It's Japanese.
No way!
Japanese.
No way!
That makes sense.
I
almost said Japanese.
No way, because they go... that
but
means
they
fuck you.
They are close.
Oh my
they say things
God.
Aggressively, but they're not swearing.
They might say
you are no good.
But that's not a cuss word.
Are you serious
they have
right
no
now,
cuss
bro?
Words in their language.
They have zero cuss words.
Well,
all those
in their original language.
In their original
Japanese,
text. Okay.
Yeah, they have no cuss words.
Mother.
They're the only language that has no cuss words.
So all those 70s movies lied to us.
I'm going to start just talking Japanese all the time, and everybody will think I'm nice.
Well, no. If you start talking Japanese the way you do it, everybody will think you racist.
This is a trivia question for Aaron, and if he doesn't get this right,
is
so fucked. So.
Okay.
I think that was like my third F-bomb. Sorry, Drew.
Start speaking Japanese, you'll be fine.
Honestly, though, and they have a cool language, so I'd love to. But it's hard.
It is hard.
One of the hardest on the planet to learn.
So how many F-bombs are there in the movie Scarface?
A lot.
But I'm going to give you an ABC. I got it.
I got a round number.
Okay. 207, 389, 1111. Or no, 111, sorry. Mm-hmm. 111. Or 193. Do you need me to repeat?
No, A.
207. I'm going to say 207.
207.
What are you going to say?
I vaguely remember hearing this
it's
before.
It's 200.
Oh,
yes, me too.
You guys know this.
I think it's 207.
Okay, that's cheating.
Well, you said vaguely 200, but one of her numbers was 193. The other one was
207. Yeah, totally. I might be wrong.
She gave me 7 either way, but yeah, I'm going to 8.
It's over 200. It's over 200.
Okay, well, you guys are all right.
Yes! Don't tell me I don't know my scarf.
You guys already
don't tell
knew
me
that. I don't
know
how to say
fuck. I remember an article where it had that and like Pulp Fiction and something else, and they were listing them.
Me too.
All right. That,
who says fuck better, Dana White, Samuel Jackson, or Al Pacino?
I have one more, and I don't think any of you are going to get this one.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. What
one
we got?
More.
Okay.
What do you call the collection of symbols used to represent obscene language?
Okay. I got it.
All the symbols that you use to say word, but you use them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So, what do you call that? Do you call it a goner, a galldite, a gremlin, or a gollix?
I'm gonna say galldite.
I like galldix because it sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm going with me.
Okay. Gollix is the answer.
Oh my god, did I just win this game?
I've never heard that before.
I haven't either.
I had never heard that either. I didn't know there was a name for that.
I don't either. But I knew I'd be right. So yeah, I won. I like that.
I don't like that. I want another question.
You can't. No, yeah. That's the game.
Yeah, because you can't
winner.
Win.
Ding 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 ding. What do we have for him, Johnny? I won. No, I got two right.
Yeah, he got two.
Jay got two right too.
Were
right?
You even playing?
No, apparently not. I didn't get
him. You never keep score.
Well, you didn't get
him. I'm sorry. I got one. We all got the Scarface.
Jay got one. Chuck got none.
Scoreboard.
Wait, no, you got one too. So you tied with Jay. Wait
a minute. Scoreboard.
Didn't Jay?
Wait, okay. Jay got two.
I'm not gonna just because he's a guest. I'm not gonna let him win.
Apparently, we really should have kept score because I know I only got one, but I thought you each got two.
Games are not for keeping score, guys. We don't have prizes. So.
Yeah, it's just for fun.
Yeah, it's just all for fun. Yeah, making movies is for fun. We don't want to make. We don't want to make any money. Wait.
We're all winners. We're all winners here.
Yeah.
Right. We get our participation trophy.
That was just kind of some fun trivia.
I love it, Sam. Thank you for the
game. Yeah, thank you. You got it.
I love it.
Next time I want a sticker to give someone for winning.
Well, let's talk about that before we close the show out then about, you know. The
sticker?
No, this is interesting to me.
There got to be a prize.
I hear this all the time, and it's kind of hard to try to kind of piece together why we do what we do. Right.
Mm. I thought it was because we're all crazy.
Well, we love storytelling. Yes. We love the way we're telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing it for the right reasons, but we are also hoping to make money off of what we're creating. Right?
I don't really give a shit.
Well, I know you don't, but I do.
Okay.
I don't want to work a day job anymore. I want to do this for a living. So the money is a part of it, correct?
Yep, of course.
However, if you say that, it sounds really kind of
bleh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And because I'm not doing it just for that reason, but that's what I'm hoping for. So I guess my question is, how do you sell that to people here outside of what we do that don't understand it? You know what I'm saying? Because we count on them to not only watch our films and support what we're doing, but also hopefully help us make some of these things because they like what we're doing. But if you come across like greedy, or it's all about the money, then you're gonna you're not gonna get anywhere.
I have something important to add.
Please do.
I'm gonna give you a scenario, just a flat out thing. You sit on this. You think about this. Everybody out there, think on this, because think about it good. Okay, I don't have like cash to just give out to homeless people, but there's always, you know, they're always on the corner. They're always, you know, they got their signs. They got a, you know, paragraph of shit, you know, they're going through, and like, you know, you feel bad, and you know, but I don't give money to them all. Mm-hmm. But there was one guy who had a cardboard sign with a smiley face on it, and I literally turned the fuck around to give him money. I don't know why, but he seemed so genuine, and all he did was put a smiley face on his cardboard sign. So, just sit on that. Just sit on it and think about it, okay? And I don't know why this, like, translates to that. But I my madness.
No,
but
I get it.
Just think on that.
I get it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And, I, you know, we talked a little bit about this when we were talking about the crowdfunding thing for me. But I think the reason so many, and I am literally, no matter how I dress it up, I'm literally asking for money. You know? But, you know, I think the people that are some of the one tact to do it successfully is to be genuine. And like, you know, yes, I, you know, like I am asking you for money. I, you know, like we're filmmaking is an art form that requires money, you know, mm-hmm. it requires some money, mm-hmm. you know, and so many different moving parts. And, you know, unless you're independently wealthy, you know, it is really a hard thing to, it's an expensive hobby if you're not making something off of it, mm-hmm. you know, right. and whether that's in fundraising or in, you know, back end or whatever it is,
doesn't matter. It's expensive.
So, yeah, it is. It is, and I think just in life, I think just like with anything in life, if you are you know genuine and you do try to offer something in return, you know, you know, whether that even if that's just, you know, 90 minutes of entertainment, you know, but you know whatever,
correct,
or a smiley face, yeah,
you know, honestly,
like that person, like you're just talking. I don't know how long ago did that take place?
That was probably a year ago or so.
Yeah, see, it's a year ago, and you're still talking about it, and it makes you smile when you said it.
It
you know
all
what I mean?
Sense in the world, because honestly, this person was like, not like feel bad for me because I got this going on or that going on.
There was.
They were being genuine, saying, you know, just want money, but with just a smiley face. And there was nothing, like they weren't trying to overdo it, say all these words.
But
it was impactful for you.
It
did
and
impact
that's, I
me
think,
because
is what...
I was like, you know what, it wasn't like, you know, some people do those signs that are homeless and try it, and they're like, I just want a beer.
Yeah.
You know, and people give money to them because they're like, oh, at least you're honest, right?
Yeah.
Right.
This guy actually gave me something.
Yes.
With that smiley face.
I think that's
it.
That's
it. What I mean?
You
didn't go too far with telling me what you want. I already know what you want.
Yeah.
Okay. We know what you want. You have a cardboard sign. We know what you want. Mm-hmm. So the smiley face just meant the world to me. And I was like, that is so creative.
Yeah,
I can't give him money. I can't
On an emotional level, he made it transactional.
Yes.
So much. You got something
level.
For
got
your
got
money.
Something out of
on
it.
Another yeah. level. On another
yeah.
level.
And
yeah.
I think 100%. That's the trick.
Yeah, it is. Creativity.
We are not launching a crowdfunding campaign with just a smiley face.
But,
that's all I'm saying. We got to have some detail in it.
You know, I know.
That's
going to
be my next one.
Yeah. I know. It, you know, in a weird way,
it
might fucking work.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, look.
You
yeah.
never
less
know.
Less is more. And less is more because people already know what you want. So
totally.
Think about it. If you're doing a crowdfunding, people know what you want.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
less is more. So be creative with the less that you give people.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it might, you know, spark something in someone. Give them joy and they will give.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. No,
that
beautiful.
Smiley face made me want to give him every dollar I had.
Well,
and
that,
I did.
Totally. Yeah, that
well,
impact.
Like ahead, one Jeff. Thing that I've been like, and I try to do more and more now, and really the crowdfunder taught it to me, like going through the crowdfunder. But like when you really genuinely interact with people that are like watching your stuff and talking about it, like you know, like even on social media, you know, it's like yeah. You'll make a post and you'll get whatever, you know, 50 comments on it and say, oh, I like the movie. I like this. I watched it on Amazon. And I see other filmmakers, like there's one out there on my friends list right now that did a crowdfunder maybe a year ago. And he makes these posts and he'll get like, you know, 60, 70 people will comment on it and you go through it. And like, he has not responded to one. He hasn't liked one. Yeah. This is somebody yeah. that's going to have a short independent career.
That's what we love about you.
You
gotta because engage. You pay attention to what you're go on there and you're like telling your you're doing your funny comment thing where you're
there's reenactments reenactments
totally and you
but
know
you're paying
of course
attention
you're not,
to what people are saying
I right? am Literally. And I of course I'm not always getting every person and of course there are days when I might
it
post something
matter,
and I
though.
And
you
I can't get
everyone.
Online that day. But in general, people see me like, you know, this individual, I see them posting all the time and they never make an effort to interact with the people that are interacting with them.
It's
and
so
granted,
important.
And they're probably not even a, you know, it's not necessarily a negative thing. They're probably not a bad person. It's just they haven't put that two and two together.
Right.
You know? And, and I was like that, you know, when I started out a little bit more. It wasn't that I was completely self-absorbed. I just didn't even register that that's a thing I'm supposed to do.
Correct.
Yeah, well, sometimes
I made
you
my
get
post,
busy.
I'm good.
Yeah. You get busy with stuff. Like, you get going on your stuff
and that,
you're just so busy.
Absolutely. And some people, the other thing we got to keep in mind, you know, as filmmakers that are promoting ourselves on social media and stuff and do spend a certain amount of time there, not everybody does that. You know, like I had a member of our production team and I was kind of getting on them about how they hadn't posted anything or commented on anybody's stuff in like 4 or 5 days leading up to our premiere. And, you know, and I genuinely like, you know, got on the phone and I wasn't bitching. I was just like genuinely like, why aren't you? And you know, they
Aaron
thought and like there was like, dude, I you know, I get on Facebook once every 5-6 days. You know, and that's just their thing. They just didn't even, you know, they're living their life and that's and that's cool.
Well, that's me. I don't do social media really, and Aaron always gets on my butt about it. He's like, you have all these friends you can utilize, you know, you put something out there and they'll see it and they, you know, you don't, I don't really like advertise for us. I don't really, because Facebook and all the
social media
is hard for me, so I don't really deal with it very well, so I don't get on it much. And you know, it could go both ways. I mean, honestly, I don't deal with it, but Aaron deals with it enough for both of us.
He does.
Like.
Aaron's really good at it. And another thing to keep in mind about it, Samantha, and not feel bad about it is like it can be very unhealthy. You know, like I'll fully admit it. Like in the last year, I've gained kind of an unhealthy obsession with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I know that I have to do it a certain amount, but you know, it got to the point where like I wake up first thing in the morning. That's what I'm looking at. Who responded to this? Who responded to that? You know, I don't do it all the time, but you know, there are days where, you know, like I'll sit there for, you know, like 2-3 hours, just bouncing back and forth and not even really accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
Just like, wait, I just made this post. I want to see if so-and-so commented on it. Like you start getting obsessive about it.
Yeah.
And then you get to a point where you start having negative feelings about people for things that are not necessarily bad, you know, you know, like this, you know, the friend I was talking about that wasn't promoting enough. And I'm mad that they're not commenting on my stuff, you know, and I would be lying if I said a percent of it wasn't, I was a little personally hurt. Like you're not looking at my stuff. They're not on the platform.
They're not on the platform.
And so if I was in your movie, I'd be that one. I would not be like,
and isn't it weird how you end up favoring the ones that do? That's what's funny.
But they do what you do.
That's the thing. If you have certain actors in your film, you know, some of them will
–
the ones that are serious about promoting themselves will promote that work.
Yeah,
and other ones are just happy to make the work and they don't give a fuck. And then you look at them and like, you really care as much as the other ones do.
And I
hate
to admit it, but even on Craving – You know, there are three or four, you know, actors that I will go out of my way to cast just because of how they've been promoting on social media. Honestly. I mean, they also happen to be great actors, but, you know, like Gregory Blair, for example, he acted and wrote in it. And I mean, he's doing the work that a director normally would. Yeah. He's out there like pulling together pull quotes and putting it together on a picture of his.
We know some of those everywhere. People too.
Yeah. Or, you know, Rachel Amanda Bryant does the same thing. You know, there's others, but, you know, they're just the two I'm calling out.
So they're not only a good actor, but they're a value in other ways.
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, I will go out of my way on every single movie to cast them because I know not only will they perform, but they're going to promote the hell out of the project.
Yeah. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. No, that is beautiful.
And that's a plus. That's a plus. Yeah. But yeah, I think expecting that from everybody is a bad thing.
Yeah.
You're totally right. And I made a comment I made a post on Facebook and it wasn't like a bitching comment. I was just talking about actors promoting or not promoting their work. Mm-hmm. And one individual, what's his name? He's Drew Maverick. Maverick or Marvick?
Marvick, I think.
Great guy, and he's really good at social media. And he laid out a really cogent thought on it. He was like, he's like, you know what, dude, I don't even expect them to do it anymore. Because like, and another thing you got to look at is, you know, like with actors, is they're doing like so many different projects, and there are going to be projects that they're happy to be a part of, they're not ashamed of, but that don't necessarily fit in with their like brand, you know, like say like if you have somebody like Drew who actually he has a social media brand, and if your movie is not fitting in his social media brand, like he's going to do a few posts for it out of, you know, the obligation of being in it, but he's not going to be like post. And that's true. And then, you know, when we're doing low budget movies, it doesn't matter. There's always going to be somebody in the cast that doesn't like the movie or doesn't like their performance or doesn't want their parents to see it. And they're not going to post.
Honestly, you're right. I love everything I'm doing. I love this podcast. I love the movies that we're doing. I love everything. And I don't post about it. But I go on there and what do you guys call it? I spam them. I go on there.
2 months later, here, Sam's on thing. I got 57 freaking notifications.
And that's how it goes. Like, literally, that's what happens.
When you finally get on,
Because I get on, you know, every once a month or whatever.
But you know what's funny?
I spam everybody.
But it helps the post. Yeah, and that's what's weird.
It
brings them back into the algorithm. Yeah. It really does.
For like, that's for a good hack. Personally, it is a negative. Facebook and just social media can be a negative thing for me personally and my mental health. And I'm sorry, I'm not afraid to admit, I like to take care of my mental health or try. Mm-hmm. And Facebook and that shit does not help because I get on there and I get sad about stuff. Like, oh, my family's doing this without me? Without me?
Well, they sent you a message on Facebook. You never responded.
Or people send me messages.
You get envious. You get angry. Like, there's so many.
It's not good for me. So I tend to stay away from it. I'll get on there when I'm in the right mood. And then I'll spam everybody.
See, I get something completely opposite of social media. Everybody's stuff that I'm on there looking at, I'll be like, nah, whatever. But then there'll be ones I hit where I'm like, wow, that inspired me.
What's the
filmmaker Chase Dudley? I think he's got
a campaign right now.
Yes, and I'm like, oh my god, see, that's what I'm talking about. Good and look stuff. At look at his smile. Look what he's trying to accomplish here.
And it's such a genuine, nice guy.
And I've never met the guy, but
I can feel it.
You can feel it, right? That's the shit I look for. Everything else, I'm just like, I don't care. It's all that garbage. But then you see stuff like that, and then it's worth it to me. Does that make sense?
This is because I didn't pee before the
show. Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine. We're getting right into the show anyway. Jay's got stuff to do. oh, man. It's fascinating what we're doing. I don't know, Jay. Yeah. I don't know, brother.
We're middle-aged people playing make-believe with our friends like we were kids once again.
Yep.
Right.
Let's go out in the woods and
make a movie.
Yeah.
And tell a story. Give me that gun. I want to shoot it. It's fake, but it's fun. And try not to go pew when you shoot it.
Yeah, don't do it with your mouth.
I was doing it when I was shooting a sniper rifle.
I know.
I couldn't help it. I had the sniper, and I'm like,
I want the camera right here on my face. Aaron, your mouth moved.
Oh, sorry. I'll do it again.
It's just like when we were doing movies with the kids. Okay, I want you to throw a shot. And what does he do? He walks up. He goes,
and I'm like.
Yeah, there's some really funny BTS on, I think it was Once Upon a Time in Mexico. where Antonio Banderas comes in with like two Uzis he's firing them, and it's 100% digital. They were like rubber guns, and he comes in on a couple of the takes. And he's like,
it's so the funny. Best.
What are you doing with your mouth, bro?
I don't know. We're playing. I was shooting the guys. Yeah. Oh man. All right, so where's Craving at, Jay? Where, what platforms, brother?
Yeah.
So you can get it on Amazon. It's on YouTube Rental, Google Play, Vudu. It's going to be on Apple TV. It'll eventually be on Tubi, but we're going to run the rental circuit for a little bit longer. Really, Amazon is where I'm trying to push people. It's where we make the most money from it. So I'm like, you know, go rent it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Unless you're just totally opposed to Amazon, then, you know, I guess YouTube is fun.
That's right. All right. That's great. I know we're very happy for you.
Yes, buddy.
We've been following you for a long time. And this film in particular, I was glad to see you come back and do a feature, a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your documentary spree got us inspired. Your feature spree now will probably inspire us even more. So
yeah, man, wait till you see I hate when people say, wait till you see the next one. But
I say it all the time.
The next one's like insane bigger. Like budget effects. Like it's pretty crazy.
I fucking love it. That's called A Hard Place. Is that where
you're Hard Place? Yeah. I have some equity. I mean, I'll spill it. I have some equity investors already lined up. We are going to run the crowdfunding portion for it, but I'll say it's at least double what Craving was.
Ooh, very good.
So, yeah. Very good. What is the genre?
It's horror. It's another monster movie. This one's a little bit more of a like straight up monster movie. It's a like monster versus monster movie.
Yeah.
So it's like 20 minutes in before you get the monster. You don't have to wait till like, you know.
Yeah, it's like right. This one's like right
three quarters of the movie.
Yeah. It's just good. Yeah. It's two different clans of monsters, and again another group of criminals that ends up caught between them and their feud.
Oh, it's like Nightbreed. That's cool.
Yeah. Like some people have compared the plot synopsis to like Underworld, like a country Underworld.
Yeah,
it's like a Hatfield McCoy kind of feud between these two totally different types of monsters, and then these people that get caught up in in the middle of it.
Nice,
I like it.
Yeah, it's a hard place.
Yeah.
Hard place.
Super exciting.
Jay Horton, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Jay, you want to know before we end what I love about you?
Oh.
Yeah, sure.
Because what I love the most about you is that when we started watching you and paying attention to you, and you know, you don't share everything like right off the bat, but you share most things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to know like the actual, like actually, what did you pay for that? And you ask you personally, you'll say it. You'll tell people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love your honesty and your genuine nature.
Yeah.
That means a lot in this industry, I think. Because, you know, a lot of people aren't willing to share all that information. But you're willing to help people and you're willing to help. And you've helped us because of that.
Yeah. And it inspired us to even tell numbers like on our show.
Yeah. Like GPO, that's why we do it.
We are making anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a month on the GPO from Tubi TV. And to me, I'm like, wow,
that's great.
Fun. That's good. I mean, it's not like 17 grand.
Well,
but
not everybody's willing
to share the numbers and the things.
Totally. And especially if you have an expectation for it, and maybe, you know, it's below your expectation for it. And so some people are embarrassed by it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
You know what? What I've come to learn really from doing my channel and talking to more and more filmmakers and seeing more numbers. I mean, the numbers are so all over the place. Can't compare yourself to any other yardstick, you know?
No.
And in the grand scheme of things, like, I don't know if you saw that Richard Lampone video that was on my channel where he broke down like 1700.
Oh, yes, I did.
And the mean average was like, $20 a month or something.
Yeah.
You know, I know. So
yeah.
like 500 to 1,000, you guys are way on the higher end.
Yeah. I'm super proud of it, you know, and that's
and if you think about it, like that's a lot of people that have seen your movie.
Yeah.
Cause you know, like you're making, you know, maybe $1 on a view, maybe, you know, if they go all the way through and all the commercials. Mm-hmm. So that's like, you know, I'm not good at math, but I would assume that's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
But I mean, hands down for you for being open to all that stuff. And even if you don't share it publicly, you're always willing to you know, answer it privately to people. Totally. And I, you know what? That is cool to me because that's helped us a million times.
Yeah.
Like so much because that kind of stuff helps you realize like, oh, you know, it's not like this is normal or this is not normal or whatever. Cause you don't know when you're first starting out and you're putting your stuff out there, you don't know.
And I think that's how you built your tribe and the community you have around you. So,
totally.
You know, bless you for that.
I think that's a good point is people don't know. They, you know, because all we know, you know, prior to a few years ago was, you know, what we hear on Entertainment Tonight and these like $1 million and that, you know, it's not all that.
Hollywood
numbers
are not our numbers in the indie world.
No.
So they're different.
No. Hollywood numbers aren't always the numbers in Hollywood either.
Hollywood, well, no, they're not. Exactly.
But you know what I'm saying?
Like, totally.
It helps to know the realistic view of things.
Right.
And you give that. And that has helped us so much. So thank you for that. And thank you for being genuine and honest. And we love you.
Yeah. And everybody else
thank
does
you.
Too, Jen.
Love you.
So, all right, Chuck, close it out. Buddy.
Well, Mr. J. Horton.
Oh, God. Don't say it like that.
Thank you for joining us on Around the Real. Thank you for hanging out for I still want to say a cup of coffee.
You can say a cup of coffee.
I drank so much fucking coffee this morning. I didn't have coffee this time. So
cup of vodka and conversation.
A cup of coffee, a flask of whiskey, a sip of a nip.
Yep.
But anyway, just remember, it's important to pay attention to what we say when we talk about Mr. J. Horton, because not only will he share everything that you want to know, if you message him privately, because he won't say anything out loud in public about the money it actually costs him, because we all know that the IRS is always listening. So make sure you cover your ass, cover your costs, and remember, everybody out there, think hard, because you're thinking anyway. Love you, buddy. Thank you.
We'll see everybody later.
Bye. For those of you that want to be a guest on Around the Reel, please email Sam at aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
Not Messenger. Do not message Aaron on Messenger because then he has to send you a message that says email Sam at aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
How come they can't just message me again?
Because nobody wants to fucking talk to you.
Can anybody reach out? That's an artist, filmmaker, actor.
If you're an artist of any kind, we want to hear from you.
But we are going to vet the crap out of you.
We don't care if you make millions of dollars in Hollywood or if you're just beginning your career in the art industry. We don't care. So everybody that wants to be on Around the Reel, yes, we want you.
That's aroundthereal253@gmail.com. This week's episode is brought to you by Entrepreneur Swag Shop. As business owners, it's important that we create the right environment and surround ourselves with the right people and the right things to keep you focused and motivated.
Entrepreneur Swag Shop offers clothing and accessories designed to empower entrepreneurs to share their message, their beliefs, and their journey with the world. Through inspiration and identity, the powerful messages printed on the items will help align you with who you want to be and what you want to achieve.
Whether you are new or experienced, male or female, young or old, you'll absolutely find a message that resonates with you. Visit EntrepreneurSwagShop.com and use code AROUNDTHEREAL during checkout to get 10% off your order today.
Get that swag, people.